All right, again, my name is Gavin Gallahan. I'm here representing the East Virginia Medical School. Presenting a topic entitled From the Classroom to the Boardroom. This is has to do a lot with kind of what you heard briefly in the first presentation about relevance of what you're taught in the classroom and how it's applied in the field itself. And there's no, I forgot to put a slide in there with the relationship thing in there, but there are no relationships I need to disclose. And just to start out, this quote, the attractions of decision-making are clear enough. An organization's decisions are the markers for actions and the precursors to accomplishment or failure. And with that said, the purpose of this project was to look at the decision-making process within a healthcare organization, specifically in this case, a rehabilitation hospital in Virginia, while they were exploring the expansion of their services. We then took that and compared it to the textbook model, an accepted model of what is involved in the decision-making process. And just a little bit of background on the hospital itself. It is licensed as both a hospital and a nursing facility. Of that 192-bed nursing facility, 106 of those beds are dual-certified for Medicare and Medicaid patients. And then you can see the primary rehabilitation admissions there. 30% of those admissions are for respiratory, followed by orthopedics is 20%, it kind of goes down from there. The majority of the population of the hospital is elderly. There is a pediatric unit that is devoted to very severely handicapped children with especially respiratory issues, and they use a lot of the ventilator services. The strategic plan for the hospital has three major focal points for improvement, which are facilities, strategic alliances, and expansion of services. As far as the facilities go, there are some areas of the building that are more than 40 years old and therefore need some renovation. There's also area on the grounds for expansion, which kind of plays in with the expansion of services that we're talking about here. There is the opportunity to move into to build new areas of the hospital on. And then the other option for facilities is the acquisition of pre-existing structures in an effort to expand kind of branding of the organization. Strategic alliances, just one real good example of that is medical schools and the students within those. It's just very important for the students, obviously, to get hands-on experience in hospitals and various locations. Not only is that important, though, the students themselves give in-service training to the staff of the hospital, which is a very good thing for the hospital and the med school. That balances out. They both are getting benefit from it. In addition, it gives them a link for later on after finishing up with med school and residency programs, they have an option for job outlets. Now, the expansion of services, as I mentioned, is going to be the major part of this paper. It's the cardiac rehabilitation that we're looking at, joint replacement, and pulmonary weaning from ventilators are those respiratory and orthopedic type admissions that I previously mentioned. Those were both in the strategic plan. They went through a similar process to implement those into service, and they are now up and running and are very successful programs. Now, how those three areas, though, the joint replacement, the pulmonary weaning, and cardiac rehabilitation were brought in to be targeted in this strategic plan was the CEO, upon appointment as the CEO, went out to acute care hospitals and asked, what are the patient populations that kind of strain your services, that are hard to keep for long-term care, that need to move out? Because as we know, acute care settings like to roll over a little more. They don't make money. They don't utilize their services the way they need to if they hold people for a long period of time. So he went to these places, and the three that they mentioned are here listed, and they've already started, you know, attacking those areas and putting them into service. So kind of the methods for this, the main ones were a literature review to diagram out what an accepted textbook model is, and also to talk with the CEO and IS representative there. The IS representative I skipped over, but that's a consultant agency, information services, that helped to do the feasibility study for the cardiac telemetry unit. And we'll get into them a little bit more here. But through speaking with them and looking at the strategic plan, we were able to determine which way the decision-making model for them lays out. Is it similar to what a textbook is, or was it completely different? They did something on their own that didn't model after what you'd see in a classroom. So, just to kind of quickly show a textbook version of a model, this, as you kind of look through it and read it, any of you that are used to program planning would realize this is very much that format for health program planning. It's also a decision model that works not only in the healthcare industry, but within other industries as well. You always have to have your goals and objectives for something, and then find problems that are important or need to be addressed. Then you just have to go through the developing alternatives for that, evaluating those alternatives to see what the pluses and minuses of them are, and then you have to make that choice, set up the implementation, and then actually go through with the implementation. In the end, after you've done this, the controlling and evaluating is making sure you've done this as smoothly as possible. Which way could you have improved on implementing? Was there another method possibly that would have been better, or should it just be scratched altogether? This next slide is VAR's version of it. It looks a little bit different. It's fairly similar. You might sit there and think, well, it looks like a different model altogether, but it's not necessarily a different model. It's a more specified model. VAR took that same kind of concept, and they just expanded on things. They have specific things that have to be done within the system. As you can see down at step 5, there's presenting to the board and a decision by the board. The board of directors for the hospital controls final decisions on everything, how their money is going to be spent on programs and services. Also, one thing you kind of notice is step 1 and 2 are reversed in this, and that was based on how the CEO went about going to those acute care settings and identifying problems prior to setting goals and objectives. It's kind of backwards from what you see in most places, but he was able to do that very effectively, and it helped out with the precision of things, which we'll break down into here. Also, the one thing you could have noticed there was, in the textbook version of the model, the word problem is used when they're looking to identify problems. We changed that to opportunities and challenges with the VAR model because not everything is that negative sounding problem. There are a lot of opportunities out there that we need to seize and go forward with the program. So it was just, that one's just a wording change, but it's a nice change, we kind of thought. But also the determination of the opportunities prior to the establishment of goals. As I said just a minute ago, those two steps were switched, and the precision that allowed was them to directly establish their goals and objectives to implement those programs effectively. It really helped out with that. And also that choosing an alternative, I briefly already stepped on. The just breaking it down was to more so show that step is required within the hospital rather than to say that it's a completely new step. It's just kind of a partial. And then the use of external contractors. You see this a lot in various different industries. You can in healthcare and others. The main reason this was done in VAR is that allows the staff at the hospital to go about their day-to-day operations and worry about the hospital, not worry about things that could be down the road. So by doing this, they bring in this consultant that was able to do the feasibility study, determine if the need in the region existed for cardiac telemetry services. With that, the previous experience with this particular consultant was there. It was something that they were able to look back at and say, we've used them before. They actually used them to help build the strategic plan. And they found that they were very good at what they did there. However, you have to think that just because that one area of business where they helped with that strategic plan went well, that does not necessarily mean that they know exactly what goes into a feasibility study of specific services and specific healthcare concerns. So when you're doing this sort of thing, you need to figure out, have they had that experience prior? Look at the area of business you're trying to enlist them for, and then get references to basically tell you they can do this, they did a great job for us, we're satisfied with it, and basically give that credibility to the consultant there. But the major thing that this really did for them is it provided external validity going into the board of directors meeting to say, for the CEO or the president to say, I think we should do this. It's a really good way to go. Yes, he is an expert because he works in the field, but he has a stake in the hospital. It's his programs he's running, and therefore he's not necessarily as detached as some external organization that can go and check the facts and say, yes, this is needed. It will be very helpful. And a board likes to see that, especially in this case, because the hospital is a city-run, city-owned facility, and therefore they have to be very careful about where their money goes. And then this quote just kind of points out that the implementation step within any decision-making process can make or break you. It may be more important than choice, and actually that step can be broken down much further. You can do a complete feasibility study just on implementation techniques for any program whatsoever. So that is just something that I wanted to note in there that is very important to look at that very carefully when you're going about the decision-making process. If you've done your homework and you know what methods of implementation are going to work best, what the costs are going to be, time constraints, and that sort of thing, it'll really help out going to supervisors, superiors, a board, anything like that. So a little more here. We started out thinking about the motivation within organizations, and it kind of backed off a little bit on that. This still kind of covers it. We did see that within these organizations, there's this motivation based on something like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which you typically see used when addressing individual motivation. However, as you see on that bottom line, organizations are made up of individuals, and therefore they kind of operate and are motivated similarly. Now, what this means, in this case, VAR, this implementing a new service, they're already up and running, they're doing really well. You kind of wonder, why do they need to keep putting new stuff in there? Well, it kind of covers like a reason for being. It puts out an esteem and a self-actualization type thing. It puts things out there for the community. It brings them to another level and helps out a community, helps out the organization, helps out the population and the people. Yes, it also has some good things for the organization as well. But those needs are also listed because when you are putting in something like another unit, a cardiac telemetry unit, you have things to worry about that people might not realize. Your physiological and safety needs, physiological in this case, systems in a hospital, water, food, anything like that that is needed on a daily basis to keep things running, are very much the foundation line below. You have to be able to address those and make sure they're okay before you can move on to those next needs. And it's something that's also just not thought of outside of individual motivation. So that's why we kind of brought it up. And one thing that we'll go into that with this kind of conclusion slide here, I just skipped down to this bottom part, is the hierarchy of needs. It is evident. It is seen there. But the rigid progression that the hierarchy of needs is established on, as Maslow placed it, is not really that realistic. It's a continuous cycle where if something happens that affects a lower level need, you have to drop down and address it. You address that, then you can move back up. Maslow states that you have to complete lower level needs before you move on to the next one. And I'm sure everybody's heard most of this Maslow stuff over the years, but it's just kind of an interesting thing when you think about healthcare. And then as far as the actual decision-making process goes, kind of wanted to know, was the textbook model better than the model in VAR, or were they very similar? And in this case, we kind of showed that the models are very similar. There are only slight little changes in there. What VAR did was they took that kind of model, that basis underneath, and they were able to, you know, customize that to what they needed. The steps in there can be changed. But the main point of this is your relevance there is, it's definitely there. Those models that you see within the classroom, within textbooks, are actually, in fact, very useful here. They're not necessarily as specific as you need them, but they give you that framework, that foundation of where you can go from there, and it helps you just a step-by-step process. And it's it was just a real interesting kind of thing to kind of see and tie it in there. So you actually got that feeling that, as I had mentioned, it is very relevant, as was mentioned earlier. So I'm glad you said that. So that's that. Your references for this. And if anybody needs contact information, I have that.